Hello, everyone. My name is Elijah Davis. This is the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, Mount Zion, at the 12th Hour in the Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is March 3, 2017, or it is Vidar 5, 2020. We're going to start our first service today with a song.
King of my heart, crown me now. Thine shall the glory be. Lest I forget thy thorn and thou, lead me to Calvary. Lest I forget Gethsemane, lest I forget thy agony, lest I forget thy love for me, lead me to Calvary. Show me the tomb where thou wast laid, tenderly mourned and wept. Angels and hosts of light arrayed, guarded the wall thou slayed. Lest I forget Gethsemane, lest I forget thy agony, lest I forget thy love for me, take me to Calvary. Let me like Mary through the gloom come with the gift to thee. Show to me now the empty tomb, lead me to Calvary. Lest I forget Gethsemane, lest I forget thine agony, lest I forget thy love for me. Lead me to Calvary. May I be ready to bear daily my life cross for thee. Even the cup of grief to share, thou hast borne all for me. Lest I forget Gethsemane, lest I forget thy agony, lest I forget thy love for me, lead me to Calvary.
Part 1, Patriarchs and Prophets. The creation. Matter of fact, we'll just start and do a little review on this creation. Father, we're the Yahweh, where the heavens made, and all the host of them by the breath of his mouth. For he spake, and it was, he commanded, and it stood fast. For he spake, and it was, he laid the foundations of the earth, that it should not be removed forever. Now, let's go on, skip a little further over here, and begin where we left off yesterday. After the creation of Adam, every living creature was brought before him to receive its name. He saw that to each had been given a companion, but among them there was not found an helpmeet for him. Among all the creatures that Elohim had made on the earth, there was not one equal unto man. And Elohim said, "It is not good that the man should be alone. I will make him an helpmeet for him." Man was not made to dwell in solitude. He was to be a social being. Without companionship, the beautiful scenes and delightful employments of Eden would have a failed to yield perfect happiness. Even communion with angels could not have satisfied his desire for sympathy and companionship. There was none of the same nature to love and to be loved. Elohim himself gave Adam a companion. He provided an helpmeet for him, a helper corresponding unto him, one who was fitted to be his companion and who could be one with him in love and sympathy. Eve was created from a rib taken from the side of Adam, signifying that she was not to control him as the head, nor to be trampled under his feet as an inferior, but to stand by his side as an equal, to be loved and protected by him. A part of man, bone of his bone and flesh of his flesh, she was his second self, showing the close union and the affectionate attachment that should exist in this relation. For no man ever yet hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it. Therefore shall a man leave his wife, a father and his mother, and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one. Elohim celebrated the first marriage. Thus the institution has for its originator the creator of the universe. Marriage is honorable. It was one of the first gifts of Yahweh to man, and it is one of the two institutions that after the fall, Adam brought with him beyond the gates of paradise, when the divine principles are recognized and obeyed in this relation. Marriage is a blessing. It guards the purity and happiness of the race. It provides for man's social needs. It elevates the physical, the intellectual, and the moral nature. When the Yahweh Elohim planted a garden eastward in Eden, and there he put the man whom he had formed. Everything that Yahweh had made was the perfection of beauty, and nothing seen a warning that would contribute to the happiness of the holy pair. Yet the Creator gave them still another token of his love, by preparing a garden especially for their home. In this garden were trees of every variety, many of them laden with the fragrant and delicious fruit. There were lovely vines growing upright, yet presenting a most graceful appearance, with their branches drooping under their load of the tempting fruit of the richest and most varied hues. It was the work of Adam and Eve to train the branches of the vine to form bowers, thus making for themselves a dwelling from the living trees covered with the foliage and fruit. There were fragrant flowers of every hue and a rich profusion. In the midst of the garden stood the tree of life, surpassing in glory all other trees. Its fruit appeared like apples of gold and silver, and had the power to perpetuate life. The creation was now complete. The heavens and the earth were finished, and all the host of them. And Yahweh saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good. Eden bloomed on earth. Adam and Eve had free access to the tree of life. No taint of sin or shadow of death marred the fair creation. The morning stars sang together, and all the sons of Yahweh shouted for joy. That was the sons of these other planets, no doubt. For the great Yahweh had laid the foundations of the earth, He had dressed the whole world in the garb of beauty and had filled it with things useful unto man. He had created all the wonders of the land and of the sea. In 6 days, the great work of the creation had been accomplished, and Yahweh rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had made. And Yahweh blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because that in it he had rested from all his work which Yahweh created and made. But Yahweh looked with satisfaction upon the work of his hands. All was perfect, worthy of this divine author, and he rested not as one weary, but as well pleased with the fruits of his wisdom and goodness and the manifestations of his glory. After resting upon the seventh day, Yahweh sanctified it, or set it apart, as a day of the rest for man. Following the example of the Creator, man was to rest upon this sacred day, that as he should look upon the heavens and the earth, he might reflect upon Elohim's great work of the creation, and that as he should behold the evidences of Yahweh's wisdom and goodness, his heart might be filled with the love and reverence for his Maker. In Eden, Yahweh set up the memorial of his work of the creation in the place in his blessing upon the seventh day. The Sabbath was committed unto Adam, the father and representative of the whole human family. Its observance was to be an act of grateful acknowledgement on the part of all who should dwell upon the earth, that Elohim was their creator and their rightful sovereign, and they were the work of his hands and the subjects of his authority. Thus the institution was wholly commemorative and given unto all mankind. There was nothing in it shadowy or of restricted appellation unto any people. Yahweh saw that a Sabbath was essential for man, even in the paradise. He needed to lay aside his own interests and pursuits for the day of the seven, that he might more fully contemplate the works of Yahweh and meditate upon his power and goodness. He needed a Sabbath to remind him more vividly of the Yahweh, and to awaken gratitude because all that he enjoyed and possessed came from the beneficent hand of the Creator. Yahweh designed that the Sabbath shall direct the minds of men to the contemplation of his created works. Nature speaks to their senses, declaring that there is a living Elohim, the Creator, the supreme ruler of all. For the heavens declare the glory of Yahweh, and the firmament showeth his handiwork. Day unto day uttereth speech, and night unto night showeth knowledge. For the beauty that clothes the earth is a token of Yahweh's love. We may behold it in the everlasting hills, in the lofty trees, in the opening buds, and the delicate flowers. All speak unto us of Yahweh, for the Sabbath ever pointing to him who made them all, this man open the great book of the nature and trace therein the wisdom, the power, and the love of the Creator. Our first parents, though created innocent and holy, were not placed beyond the possibility of wrongdoing. Yahweh made them free moral agents, capable of appreciating the wisdom and benevolence of his character and the justice of his requirements, and with full liberty to yield or to withhold obedience. They were to enjoy communion with Yahweh and with the holy angels, that before they could be rendered eternally secure, their loyalty must be tested. At the very beginning of Elohim's existence, a check was placed upon the desire for self-indulgence and the fatal passion that lay at the foundation of Satan's fall. For the tree of the knowledge, which should stood near the tree of the life in the midst of the garden, was to be a test of the obedience, faith, and love of our first parents. While permitted to eat freely of every other tree, they were forbidden to taste of this on pain of death. They were also to be exposed to the temptation of the Satan, but if they endured the trial, they would finally be placed beyond the power to enjoy perpetual favor with Yahweh. Yahweh placed man under the law as an indispensable condition of his very existence. He was a subject of the divine government, and there can be no government without law. Yahweh might have created man without the power to transgress his law. He might have withheld the hand of Adam from touching the forbidden fruit, but in that case, man would have been and not a free moral agent, but a mere automation. Without freedom of the choice, his obedience would not have been voluntary, but forced. There could have been no development of the character. Such a course would have been contrary unto Elohim's plan in the dealing with the inhabitants of other worlds. They would have been unworthy of man as an intelligent being and would have sustained Satan's charge of Yahweh's arbitrary rule. Okay, Yahweh made man upright. He gave him the noble traits of the character, with no bias toward evil. He endowed him with the high intellectual powers and presented before him the strongest possible inducements to be true unto his allegiance. Obedience, perfect and perpetual, was the condition of the eternal happiness. On this condition, he was to have access to the tree of life. For the home of our first parents was to be a pattern for other homes, as their children should go forth to occupy the earth. That home, beautified by the hand of Yahweh himself, was not a gorgeous palace. Men in their pride delight in magnificent and costly edifices and glory in the works of their own hand. But Yahweh placed Adam in a garden. This was his dwelling. The blue heavens were his dome. The earth with its delicate flowers and carpet of the living green was its floor. And the leafy branches of the goodly trees were its canopy. Its walls were hung with the most magnificent adorning, the handiworks of the great master artist, and the surroundings of the holy pair was a lesson for all time. That true happiness is found not in the indulgence of pride and luxury, but in a communion with the Elohim through his created works. If man would have less attention, would give less attention unto the artificial, and would cultivate greater simplicity, they would come for far nearer unto answering the purpose of Yahweh in their creation. Pride and ambition are never satisfied. But those who are truly wise will find a substantial and elevating pleasure in the sources of the enjoyment that Elohim has placed within the reach of all. Unto the dwellers in Eden was committed the care of the garden, to dress it and to keep it. Their occupation was not wearisome, but pleasant and invigorating. Elohim appointed labor as a blessing unto man to occupy his mind, to strengthen his body, and to develop his faculties. In the mental and physical activities, Adam found one of the highest pleasures of his holy existence. And when, as a result of his disobedience, he was driven from the beautiful home and forced to struggle with a stubborn soul to gain his daily bread, that very labor, although widely different from his pleasant occupation in the garden, was a safeguard against temptation and a source of happiness. Those who regard work as a curse attended, though it be with the weariness and pain, are cherishing an error. The rich often look down with contempt upon the working classes, but this is wholly at variance with the Elohim's purpose in the creating man. What are the possessions of even the most wealthy in comparison with the heritage given unto the Adam? Yet Adam was not to be idle. Our Creator, who understands what is for man's happiness, appointed Adam his work. For the true joy of the life is found only by the working men and women. For the angels are diligent workers. They are the ministers of Yahweh unto the children of men. For the Creator has prepared no place for the stagnation practice of the indolent. While they remained true unto Elohim, Adam and his companion were to bear rule over the earth. Unlimited control was given them over every living thing, for the lion and the lamb sported peacefully around them, or lay down together at their feet. For the happy birds flitted about them without fear, and as their glad songs ascended to the praise of their Creator, Adam and Eve united with them in the thanksgiving of the Father and the Son. And the holy pair were not only children under the fatherly care of the Yahweh, but students receiving instruction from the all-wise Creator. They were visited by angels and were granted communion with their Maker, with no obscuring veil between. They were full of the vigor imparted by the Tree of Life, and their intellectual power was but little less than that of the angels. For the mysteries of the visible universe, the wondrous works of Him, who is perfect in knowledge, afforded them an exhaustless source of instrument and delight, or instructions and delight. For the laws and operations of the nature which have engaged men's study for 6,000 years was open unto their minds by the infinite framer and upholder of all. They held converse with the leaf and the flower and tree, getting from each the secrets of its life. With every living creature, from the mighty leviathan that playeth among the waters, unto the insect mote that floats in the sunbeam, Adam was familiar. He had given unto each his name, and he was acquainted with the nature and habits of all. Yahweh's glory in the heaven, or in the heavens, the innumerable worlds and their orderly revolution, for the balancing of the clouds, the mysteries of the light and sound, of the day and night, all were upon open, all was open for the study of our first parents. On every leaf of the forest or stone of the mountain, and every shining star in earth and air and sky, Yahweh's name was written. For the order and harmony of the creation spoke unto them of the infinite wisdom and power. They were ever discovering some attraction that filled their hearts with a deeper love and called forth fresh expression of the gratitude. So long have remained loyal unto the divine law, their capacity to know, to enjoy, and to love would continually increase. They would be constantly gaining new treasures of the knowledge, discovering fresh springs of the happiness, and obtaining clearer and yet clearer conception of the immeasurable, unfailing love of the Yahweh. Okay, that's the end of chapter 2. Our third chapter with the title of The Temptation and Fall. The Temptation and Fall. Chapter 3. No longer free to stir up rebellion in heaven, Satan's enmity against the Yahweh found a new field in the planet run of the human race. In the happiness and peace of the holy pair in Eden, he beheld a vision of the bliss that unto him was forever lost. Moved by envy, he determined to incite them to disobedience and bring upon them the guilt and penalty of sin. He would change their love to distrust and their songs of praise to reproaches against their Maker. Thus he would not only plunge these innocent beings into the same misery which he was himself enduring, but would cast dishonor upon Yahweh and cause grief in heaven. Our first parents were not left without a warning of the danger that threatened them. Heavenly messengers opened unto them the history of Satan's fall and his plots for their destruction, unfolding more fully the nature of the divine government which the prince of the evil was trying to overthrow. It was by the disobedience and to the just commands of the Yahweh that Satan and his host had fallen. How important then that Adam and Eve should honor that law by which alone it is possible for order and equity to be maintained. The law of Yahweh is as sacred as himself. It is a revelation of his will, a transcript of his character. The expression of the divine love and wisdom. The harmony of creation depends upon the perfect conformity of all beings, of everything animate and inanimate, to the law of the Creator. Yahweh has ordered laws for the government not only of the living beings, but of all the operations of the nature. Everything is under fixed law, which cannot be disregarded. And while everything in the nature is governed by the natural laws, man alone, of all that inhabits the earth, is amenable unto the moral law. To man, the crowning work of creation, Yahweh has given power to understand his requirements, to comprehend the justice and beneficence of his law, and his sacred claims upon him, and of man answering obedience is required. Man's unswerving obedience is required. Like the angels, the dwellers in Eden had been placed upon probation. Their happy estate could be retained only on condition of fidelity unto the Creator's law. They could obey and live, or disobey and perish. For the Yahweh had made them the recipients of the rich blessings, but should they disregard his will, he who spared not the angels of sin could not spare them. Transgression would not forfeit his gifts and bring upon them misery and ruin. For the angels warned them to be on their guard against the devices of Satan, for his efforts to ensnare them would be unwearied, while they were obedient to Yahweh. The evil one could not harm them, for if need be, every angel in heaven would be sent to their help. If they steadfastly repelled his first insinuations, they would be as secure as the heavenly messengers. But should they once yield to temptation, their nature would become so depraved that in themselves they would have no power and no disposition to resist Satan. For the tree of knowledge had been made a test of their obedience and their love unto Elohim. Yahweh had seen fit to lay upon them but one prohibition as to the use of all that was in the garden. But if they should disregard his will in this particular, they would incur the guilt of the transgression. Satan was not to follow them with the continual temptations. He could have accessed them only at the forbidden tree. Should they attempt to investigate its nature, they would be exposed to his wiles. They were admonished to give careful heed unto the warning which Yahweh had sent them, and to be content with the instruction that he had seen fit to impart. In order for the accomplishment of his work unperceived, Satan chose to employ as his medium the serpent, a disguise well adapted for his purpose of the deception. The serpent was then one of the wisest and most beautiful creatures on the earth. It had wings, and while flying through the air, presented an appearance of dazzling brightness, having the color and brilliancy of the burnished gold, resting in the rich-laden branches of the forbidden tree, and wriggling itself with the delicious fruit, it was an object to arrest the attention and delight the eye of the beholder. Thus, in the Garden of the Peace, lurked the destroyer, watching for his prey. For the angels had cautioned Eve to beware of separating herself from her husband while occupied in their daily labor in the garden. With him she'd be in less danger from temptation than if she were alone. But absorbing her pleasing task, she unconsciously wandered from his side. On perceiving that she was alone, she felt an apprehension of danger, but dismissed her fears, deciding that she had sufficient wisdom and strength to discern evil and to withstand it. Unmindful of the angel's caution, she soon found herself gazing with mingled curiosity and admiration upon the forbidden tree. The fruit was very beautiful, and she questioned with herself why Yahweh had withheld it from them. Now was the tempter's opportunity, as if he were able to discern the workings of her mind. He addressed her, "Yea, hath Yahweh said ye shall not eat of every tree of the garden?" Eve was surprised and startled as she thus seemed to hear the echo of her thoughts. But the serpent continued in a musical voice, with subtle praise of her surpassing loveliness, and his words were not displeasing. Instead of fleeing from the spot, she lingered wonderingly to hear a serpent speak. Had she been addressed by a being like the angels, her fears would have been excited, but she had no thought that the fascinating serpent could become the medium of the fallen foe. Unto the tempter's ensnaring question, she replied, "We may eat of the fruit of the trees of the garden, but of the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, Yahweh has said, ye shall not eat of it, neither shall ye touch it, lest you die." And the serpent said unto the woman, "Ye shall not surely die, for Yahweh doth know that in the day ye eat thereof, then your eyes shall be open, and ye shall be as gods, knowing good and evil." Now partaking of this tree, he declared, they would attain unto a more exalted sphere of the existence, and enter a broader field of the knowledge. He himself had eaten of the forbidden fruit, and as a result had acquired the power of speech, and he insinuated that the Yahweh's jealousy desired to withhold it from them, lest they should be exalted to equality with himself. It's because of its wonderful properties, imparting wisdom and power, that he had prohibited them from tasting or even touching it. For the tempter intimated that the divine warning was not to be actually fulfilled. It was designed merely to intimidate them. How could it be possible for them to die? Had they not eaten of the tree of life? Elohim had been seeking to prevent them from reaching a nobler development and finding a greater happiness. Such has been Satan's work from the days of Adam unto the present, and he has proceeded with a great success. He tests men to distrust Elohim's love and to doubt his wisdom. He is constantly seeking to excite a spirit of the irreverent curiosity, a restless and crazy desire to penetrate the secrets of the divine wisdom and power, and their efforts to search out what Elohim has been pleased to withhold. Mortals overlook the truth which he has revealed, and which are essential to salvation. Satan tempts men to disobedience by leading them to believe they are entering a wonderful field of knowledge. But this is all a deception. Related with their ideas of progression, they are, by the trampling on Yahweh's requirements, setting their feet in the path that leads to degradation and death. Satan represented to the holy pair that they would be gainers by breaking the law of Yahweh. Do we not today hear similar reasoning? Many talk of the nearness of those who obey Elohim's commandments, while they themselves claim to have broader ideas and to enjoy greater liberty. What is this but an echo of the voice from Eden? In the day you eat thereof, transgress the divine requirements, you shall be as gods. Satan claimed to have received great good by eating of the forbidden fruit, but he did not let it appear that by the transgression he had become an outcast from heaven. Though he had found sin to result in an infinite loss, he concealed his own misery. In order to draw others into the same position, so now the transgressor seeks to disguise his true character. He may claim to be holy, but his exalted profession only makes him the more dangerous as a deceiver. He is on the side of Satan, trampling upon the law of Yahweh and leading others to do the same unto their eternal ruin. Eve really believed the words of Satan, but her belief did not save her from the penalty of sin. She disbelieved the words of Yahweh, and this was what led to her fall. In the judgment, men will not be condemned because they conscientiously believed the lie, but because they did not believe the truth, because they neglected the opportunity of learning what is true. Notwithstanding, the sophistry of Satan, to the contrary, is always disastrous to disobey Yahweh. We must set our hearts to know what is the truth. All the lessons which Elohim has caused to be placed on record in his word are for our warning and instruction. They are given to save us from deception. Their neglect will result in ruin to ourselves, and whatever contradicts Yahweh's word, we may be sure, proceeds from Satan. For the serpent plucked the fruit of the forbidden tree and placed it in the hands of the half-reluctant Eve. Then he reminded her of her own words, that Elohim had forbidden them to touch it, lest they die. She would receive no more harm from eating the fruit, he declared, than from touching it, perceiving no evil result from what she had done. Eve grew bolder when she saw that the tree was good for food and that it was pleasant to the eyes and a tree to be desired to make one wise. She took of the fruit thereof and did eat. It was grateful to the taste, and as she ate, she seemed to feel a vivifying power and imagine herself entering upon a higher state of the existence. Without fear, she plucked and ate, and now, having herself transgressed, she became the agent of Satan and worked in the ruin of her husband. In a state of strange, unnatural excitement, with her hands filled with the forbidden fruit, she sought his presence and related all that had occurred. An expression of sadness came over the face of Adam. He appeared astonished and alarmed. To the words of Eve, he replied that this must be the foe against whom they had been warned, and by the divine sentence she must die. In answer, she urged him to eat, repeating the words of the serpent, that they should not surely die. She reasoned that this must be true, for she felt no evidence of Elohim's displeasure, but on the contrary, realized a delicious, exhilarating influence, thrilling every faculty with a new life, such she imagined, as inspired the heavenly messengers. Adam understood that his companion had transgressed the command of Yahweh, disregarded the only prohibition laid upon them as a test of their fidelity and love. There was a terrible struggle in his mind. He mourned that he had permitted Eve to wander from his side. But now the deed was done, he must be separated from her, whose society had been his joy. How could he have had it thus? Adam had enjoyed the companionship of Elohim's unholy angel. He had looked upon the glory of the Creator. He understood the high destiny open unto the human race should they remain faithful unto the Yahweh. Yet all these blessings were lost, shot up in the fear of the losing that one gift, which in his eyes outvalued every other. Love, gratitude, loyalty to the Creator, all were overborne by love to Eve. She was a part of himself, and he could not endure the thought of separation. He did not realize that the same infinite power he had from the dust of the earth created him a living, beautiful form, and had in love given him a companion to supply her place. He resolved to share her fate if she must die. He would die with her. After all, he reasoned, might not the words of the wise servant be true? Eve was before him as beautiful and apparently as innocent as before. This act of disobedience she expressed greater love for him than before. No sign of death appeared in her, and he decided to brave the consequences. He seized the fruit and quickly ate. After his transgression, Adam at first imagined himself eating and entering into a higher state of existence, but soon the thought of his sin filled him with terror. The air, which had hitherto been of a mild and uniform temperature, seemed to chill the guilty pair. The love and peace which had been theirs was gone, and in its place they felt a sense of sin, a dread of the future, a nakedness of the soul. The robe of light which had enshrouded them now disappeared. And to supply its place, they endeavored to fashion for themselves a covering, for they could not, while unclothed, meet the eye of the Yahweh and holy angel. They now began to see the true character of their sin. Adam reproached his companion for her folly in leaving his side and permitting himself to be deceived by the serpent. But they both flattered themselves that he who had given them so much evidence of his love would pardon this one transgression, or that they would not be subjected to so dire a punishment as they had feared. Satan exulted in his success. He had tempted the woman to distrust Yahweh's love, to doubt his wisdom, and to transgress his law. And through her he had caused the overthrow of Adam. But the great law giver was about to make known unto Adam and Eve the consequences of their transgression. For the divine presence was manifested in the garden. In their innocence and holiness, they had joyfully welcomed the approach of their Creator. But now they fled in terror and sought to hide in the deepest recesses of the garden. The Yahweh Elohim called unto Adam and said unto him, "Who art thou?" He said, "I heard thy voice in the garden, and I was afraid, because I was naked, and I hid myself." And he said, "Who told thee that thou wast naked? Hast thou eaten of the tree whereof I commanded thee that thou should not eat? Thou shouldest not eat." Adam can neither deny nor excuse his sin, but instead of manifesting penitence, he endeavored to cast the blame upon his wife, and thus upon Yahweh himself. "The woman whom thou gavest to be with me, she gave thee near the tree, and I did eat." He who, from love to Eve, had deliberately chosen to forfeit the approval of Yahweh, his home in paradise, and the eternal life of joy, could now, after his fall, endeavor to make his companion and even the Creator himself responsible for the transgression. So terrible is the power of sin. When the woman was asked, "What is this that thou hast done?" she answered, "The serpent beguiled me, and I did eat." "Why didst thou create the serpent? Why didst thou suffer him to enter Eden?" These were the questions implied in her excuse for her sin. Thus, like Adam, she charged Yahweh with the responsibility of their fall. For the spirit of self-justification originated in the father of lies. It was indulged by our first parents as soon as they yielded to the influence of Satan, and has been exhibited by all the sons and daughters of Adam. Instead of humbly confessing their sins, they try to shield themselves by casting the blame upon others, upon circumstances, or upon Yahweh, making even his blessings an occasion of murmuring against him. Yahweh then passed sentence upon the serpent, because they had done this, "Because thou hast done this, thou art cursed above all cattle, and above every beast of the field. Upon thy belly shalt thou go, and dust shalt thou eat all the days of thy life." Since it had been employed as Satan's medium, the serpent was to share the visitation of the divine judgment. From the most beautiful and admired of the creatures of the field, it was to become the most groveling and detested of them all, feared and hated by both men and beasts. The words next addressed unto the serpent applied directly unto Satan himself, pointing forward to his ultimate defeat and destruction. "I will put enmity between thee and the woman, and between thy seed and her seed. It shall bruise thy head, and thou shalt bruise his heel." Eve was told of the sorrow and pain that must henceforth be her portion. Yahweh said, "Thy desire shall be to thy husband, and he shall rule over thee." The creation of Elohim had made her the equal of Adam. Had they remained obedient unto Elohim in the harmony with his great law of love, they would ever have been in harmony with each other. But sin had brought discord, and now their union should be maintained in harmony, preserved only by the submission on the part of the one or the other. Eve had been the first in the transgression, and she had fallen into the temptation by separating from her companion. Contrary unto the divine direction, it was by her solicitation that Adam sinned, and she was now placed in the subjection of her husband. Had the principles enjoyed in the law of Elohim been cherished by the fallen race, this sentence, though growing out of the results of sin, would have proved a blessing unto them. But man's abuse of the supremacy thus given him has too often rendered the lot of the woman very bitter and made her life a burden. For Eve had been perfectly happy by her husband's side in her Eden home. But like restless modern Eve, she was flattered with the hope of entering a higher sphere than that which Elohim had assigned them. In attempting to rise above her original position, she fell far below it. A similar result will be reached by all who are unwilling to take up cheerfully their life duties in accordance with the Elohim's plan. In their efforts to reach positions for which he had not fitted them, many are leaving vacant the place where they might be a blessing. In their desire for a higher sphere, many have sacrificed true womanly dignity and nobility of the character, and have left undone the very work that heaven appointed them. To Adam, Yahweh declared, "Because thou hast hearkened unto the voice of thy wife, and hast eaten of the tree of the which I commanded thee, saying, thou shalt not eat of it, cursed is the ground for thy sake, and sorrow shalt thou eat of it all the days of thy life. Thorns also and thistles shall it bring forth unto thee. And thou shalt eat the herbs of the field, and the sweat of thy brow shalt thou eat the bread till thou return unto the ground, for out of it wast thou taken, for dust thou art, and unto dust shalt thou return." It was not the will of Yahweh that the sinless pair should know aught of the evil. He had freely given them the good and had withheld the evil. But contrary to his command, they had eaten of the forbidden tree, and now they would continue to eat of it. They would have the knowledge of evil all the days of their life. From that time, the race would be afflicted by Satan's temptation. Instead of the happy labor hitherto foreappointed them, anxiety and toil were to be their lot. They would be subject to disappointment, grief, and pain, and finally to death. Under the curse of sin, all nature was to witness the man of the character and results of rebellion against Yahweh. When Yahweh made man, he made him ruler over the earth and all living creatures. So long as Adam remained loyal unto heaven, all nature was in subjection unto him. But when he rebelled against the divine law, the inferior creatures were in rebellion against his rule. Thus, Yahweh in his great mercy would show men the sacredness of his law and lead them by their own experience to see the danger of sitting to the side even in the slightest degree. And the life of toil and terror, which was henceforth to be man's law, was appointed in love. It was a dispute rendered needful by his sin to place a check upon the indulgence of the appetite and passion to develop habits of the self-control. It was a part of Yahweh's great plan for man's recovery from the ruin and degradation of the sin. This brings in the rest of this hour. Contact us at the 11th hour call. We're going to close now with a song.
Breath in the Soul by Elijah David.
song that I've written February 26, 2006. I used to like the things that meant good to me, just like the world thought it would be, a little okay if the sample is part of blue. But just like sinning, that's what it is, started out with a little fizz and ended up with bills long overdue. After I started having enough of sampling all that wonderful stuff, I went to the yard and threw in the towel. He asked me what changed my mind. He said, look, too much of that red wine, and besides that, feel it again, clean, wet, just brown. For the word of the yard is breath and the soul. Something that I'll never let go. Something that means more than tongue can tell. Rising up early, going to bed late in the quiet hours, and then it fades, and then I fall asleep, for all is well. I used to like the things that appealed to me, just like others I couldn't see. Couldn't say to Yahweh's word to save my soul. Then one day he opened his book, something that I'd longed for so, something that had never grown old. The end that I stood as I began to read, I soon discovered I had a great need to be baptized in the likeness of his death. For the day to be like him, to be free from sin and hold again, then I close my eyes and sleep rest. Being born of the Spirit and washed in the blood, a person gets y'all like nothing else does, fills you with his love now and eternally. So take hold, brother, and don't you let go. I wrap his love all around your soul, putting it on display for all the world to see. For the bird of the hour is breath and soul, something that I never let go, something that needs more than tongue can tell. Rising up early,